Good morning, everybody. Welcome on in. Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. Thanks for tuning on in. We'll dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing on today's program. And, of course, do it with a heavy heart as the legend, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, we learned yesterday, passed away too young at 66 years old. Heartbreaking news in the boxing community. Yesterday, them doing the 10 count before Estrada Chocolatito. Michael Buffer doing the intro, the 10 count eulogy. And it was a hard one to swallow, man. This is an absolute titan of the sport. One that kind of precedes my time a little bit, as you know, his fight with Sugar Ray Leonard happened when I was 1 year old. So it was last his career ended as I was a baby. But You know the legendary fights, him and Hearns. I even fired that up yesterday after getting the news, as you know, these are just iconic bouts that you are thankful that are still there to be cherished. But this is a guy, you know, just took on all comers and was just such a thrilling fighter in the way that he fought, his style, unbelievable. And then, of course, just, you know, after the way the career ended, where he thought he got screwed, just, you know, going away to Italy, turning down $15 million offers to come back and do it again. And, you know, to get that news yesterday absolutely sucked. So, you know, definitely we'll be thinking about him. I'm sure there are those who could probably eulogize him a lot better, but anytime you can... anytime you lose somebody like that, that touches so many people in the sport, that meant so much to fans, you know, the Tyson before Tyson, the guy who was undisputed middleweight champion of the world for such a long reign, such a thrilling fighter, such a lion heart. And, you know, to get that news yesterday was absolutely heartbreaking. So, you know, rest in peace to Marvelous Marvin Hagler. To his family and everybody who's hurt by his and to the fans and everybody hurt by him leaving us. That was a tough one to hear yesterday, for sure. So there's no easy way to transition from over that. We'll get into a little bit of last night with the UFC before we get into some of the championship boxing that went down yesterday as well. But yesterday you had Leon Edwards in a big matchup for himself as he was taking on Bilal Muhammad, as Leon finds himself in a tough spot as far as, you know, trying to get his name out there, trying to get people to really glam on to him and get his respect. And you know, I think for a lot of fans right now is known as the guy who got into a scuffle with Jorge Masvidal backstage at a UFC event. More so than a guy who was on an 8-fight win streak. And yesterday, he's taking on Bilal Muhammad. Another twist, because he was supposed to be fighting Khamzat Chimaev, who wasn't highly ranked, but was, you know, everybody was looking at Khamzat as this guy, this boogeyman, this next wave of welterweight. And I think it showed big stones from Leon to basically say, forget the rankings. You know, I'll take out the guy that everybody thinks is the guy right now, even if it's not, you know, maybe the most political thing to do, because, you know, you've put in more time than him. You got a longer win streak than him. You got a higher rank. A lot of people wouldn't take that fight. So I definitely give Leon a lot of credit for being willing to take on Chimaev. And then that fight falls through. He's got to find something. He's main eventing. He's got a showcase. So he takes on Bilal Muhammad. Tough as they come. Really, really tough guy. Well-rounded. And it ends in just the worst way possible for him, because in the second round, about 18 seconds, and he had already eye poked him once in the first round, but Leon Edwards almost fish hooked. If you see the still shots, almost fish hooked Bilal Muhammad on this second eye poke, and you could just see immediately Bilal Muhammad is writhing in pain, crying. Like, these are the toughest of tough men. You know, the fighter for every, you know, jackal that wants to sit behind a keyboard and say, you know, Aljamain Sterling is acting, or this guy is not tough. These are crazy people that make their living by fighting each other in a cage half naked. You know, if you want to get down to it. And Bilal Muhammad is audibly crying because of how much this eye poke hurts. So when you immediately start hearing that, you're like, he's not continuing. There's no shot. Doctor comes in. You can see that the eye's already swelling up. It's really, really bad. You could tell by his the wailing coming from. I think not only probably that he was in a lot of pain, but also he probably can't see and probably knows this opportunity that he had to beat the number three guy in the world was just taken away from him. And it's a tough, it's a lose-lose on both sides for these guys. It's a lose-lose for Bilal because, you know, he did the hard thing of stepping up in a tough spot to take on a guy in Leon Edwards that is the number three guy in the world on a huge win streak. If Bilal wins this fight, maybe he's not fighting for the title next, but he is now officially a contender. That he is in that picture. People have to take him seriously. People have to give him his respect. And that's a big, big deal. And for Leon, it's a lose because what does this do? I mean, I think in the most part, the thing is with Leon is he's got the respect of the champion. You know, speaking with Kamaru before, listen, Kamaru was going to fight. He thought that Leon was more deserving of a shot before the Masvidal fight, the first Masvidal fight, than Masvidal was. And I didn't agree with that. I thought that Masvidal definitely deserved the shot more, even if, Kamaru thought that he was a bit of a hype train. But the problem was those two did fight, and it did really good business. And so as a guy in Kamaru Usman, you're looking at yourself and you say, oh, I already got a victory over both of these guys. One guy nobody knows. And the other guy, we did a million plus buys on 6 days' notice. Who are you going to fight if you're the champion? You're going to fight the guy who does big business. Why are you going to fight Leon Edwards? And so Leon, I thought, really needed something tonight that really just got the fans buzzing and getting behind him. And he almost had it. I mean, he hit Bilal Muhammad a nasty head kick in the first round. Looked like it really, really hurt him. Bilal did end up getting his wits about him and, you know, was able to tie him up a little bit, put him up against the cage. But he had him in a bad spot. But I thought nobody really, you know, this guy needed a statement more than anybody because he is in a division right now that he has a lot of competition as far as name is concerned. There's a lot of guys who are deserving to get back in there with Kamaru. And, you know, the thing is you have a champion right now who's kind of cleaned out the division. And so you need to do something almost like a Dustin Poirier did in the lightweight division. Like you need to do something that says, all right, that guy, he's lost the champ before, but look at the way he fights. He's an absolute G. I want to see him fight again. And when you have something like this happen, it's just unfortunate. And I know he's saying afterwards, well, I think I deserve the title shot. I think that it's like, nah, man, you can't just show up, have something accidental happen, and you get the title shot. You at least need to get your hand raised in some way, shape, or form. And you don't even have that. You have a no contest. With a round of work, I would say if anything, he just needs to get another fight in. He doesn't want to fight Bilal Muhammad. I get that. You don't necessarily want to have to do the thing where like, well, I was kind of doing him a favor anyway, accepting the fight or taking the fight when offered just because I wanted to fight. And now you're in the spot where it's like, all right, well, you need to get another fight. Like, you do need to get the fans behind you. I don't know what that fight is. It feels like the one, like, look, he has good storylines with both Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal. It's just a matter of the willingness of getting those guys in there with Leon. But the thing that he has the advantage of is if he's willing to be more active, if he is willing to be the guy that goes out there and fights somebody, if both of those guys are going to sit on the sidelines, then maybe he does sneak in there and get the title shot a la Gilbert Burns. Maybe go fight Gilbert Burns. You know, Gilbert just went and fought for the title. You go beat a guy like that. You know, maybe that is the way that he goes about it. Because if you look at his resume right now, since the loss to Kamaru, you know, Brian Barberina, Vicente Luque, Donald Cerrone, Gunnar Nelson by decision, beating RDA by decision. You know, just there's a lot of guys who are been on their last legs and all that type of stuff. Really needs something that I think just makes him stand out. And that's where tonight really hurts, because this is going to go by the wayside of, even if it was incidental, it's just like, oh, it's just, well, all right, then what do we do? And right now he's number three. Steven Thompson called him out, I think, at one point. I mean, that'd be an interesting one. Wonder Boy Thompson versus Leon Edwards. He really does need something else to do, because he just need, like, if you're going to just give him the title shot, and we can talk about win streaks and that's great and all that type of stuff. We've seen guys with long win streaks before get put off. Tony Ferguson comes to mind. And I just think that for the sake of the division, you know, he just needs to get that hand raised one more time. It's just been too long. 8 wins in all is great, but now he still doesn't have an official decision since July of 2019. So we're coming up on 2 years. That's crazy. So that's a tough one. And, you know, it's an unfortunate thing, because it was a really fun fight night. You had Ryan Spann. He had a crazy TKO win over Misha Shcherbakov. That was a great knockout. Dan Ige, his knockout over Gavin Tucker was a one-shot, one-hitter quitter. That was absolutely crazy. Davey Grant over Jonathan Martinez. He came back after looking like he was going to lose. The three knockouts before, it was just wild. The lead up to this main event. And so for the main event to end the way that it did is just quite unfortunate for all parties considered. And I don't think Leon's going to get the title. I think that he needs to find somebody in this top five that is willing to fight him, whether that be a Chiesa, whether that be a Steven Wonderboy Thompson, whether that be... look, I tell you what, I really wouldn't mind this. I don't think it's going to happen, because I think that Jorge already feels like he's got it on the... He's already got the championship fight on the line. But man, I mean, him and Jorge is a fight that would be great, just from the standpoint of you're going to be able to roll that backstage footage, the three-piece and the soda interview, a gazillion times. I feel like it could actually even be a pretty big pay-per-view fight, especially if you did it. I don't know if they're able to do things over in London, but if you were able to maybe bring some of the Brits over here to Miami, I don't know what the rules are. But I just feel like those two would make for a hell of a fight. I think that the style would make for a hell of a fight. I think the lead-up would be incredible. It's just a matter of, you know, if you're Jorge Masvidal, you don't give up a chance to be world champion to fight Leon Edwards. But if he finds himself in another scenario where, you know, maybe negotiations hit a snafu, Leon's a guy. Look, I think it's a good style for George. I don't think it's a super dangerous fight. It's not like Leon's got this like unbelievable power. He's very talented. He's got some good tools, but I think George does too. I don't think that, I don't necessarily think that he goes in there with a deficiency in skills. I really don't. So, you know, this welterweight division is in a bit of a murky place right now, after, because I think that Leon had his opportunity tonight to really make his case. And when you have an ending like that, you're not able to do that. The other big thing was everybody was talking about the gloves. This doesn't happen much. It really, really sucks that it did happen. Should they fix the gloves? They've talked about a more curved glove. People kept bringing up the Trevor Whitman model that's been kind of going around. You guys can go check that out on Twitter if you want to, but he's got apparently some patented glove that the UFC wanted to buy from him. Maybe they got to make a move there. Maybe they do. I know that the eye poke thing has been a problem for a while. It does seem silly that in the midst of combat, we don't have an equipment that can prevent, you know, losing via Three Stooges. So I would be for it if they could find some way to go about it and get it. It's just, you know, they're always reluctant on change too. So really, really fun night of fights as far as crazy night of knockouts, but an unfortunate ending to the way Leon's opportunity really got poked away, if you will. So we'll take a quick break. We'll get into a little bit of boxing. David Benavidez making his return last night. Where does he put himself in the 168 division? And we have another big-time fight coming down to South Florida. I'll tell you about that coming up next. Welcome back to Owen's Fight Show here on 7-Eye of the Ticket. As we'll get into a little bit of Showtime boxing, you had David Benavidez making his return, the former super middleweight champion of the world. He was taking on Ronald Ellis in the Showtime bubble from Miccosukee Resorts and Gaming. And David Benavidez had a couple of things going for him. We got a chance to talk to him this week, and it was his first fight as a father, which I found interesting because, you know, he's had some pretty wild stuff happen to him. I mean, this is a guy that has lost his title because of a drug test. He has lost his title because of missing weight. So at 24 years old, he's already had a lot of the patented, like, riches of boxing, things go awry for his career. And so, you know, maybe having a kid and being a dad at this age, you know, maybe this is something that will settle him down, put him in a level of focus and all that type of stuff. Although I, you know, talking to him this week, I know that Miccosukee has been a house of horrors for boxers. Jojo Diaz has had problems making weight. He had problems. They don't have, I guess, the sauna, the equipment that guys are just used to when it comes to being ready for a fight. You know, we don't see this much in the UFC. They're in the Performance Institute. Like, they have the top-notch facilities. And with these boxers, they're basically in a hotel. And it's not much. They're isolated. It's a tough situation. So he made weight easily this time around, which was great to see. And he's in this spot right now that is tough because, you know, as you guys have heard, we had Caleb Plant on recently and David called him out and tried to make that fight happen. And Caleb Plant's like, no, bro. I tried calling you out when you were the champ and you wanted none of it. And we tried to do a unified match. You didn't want to do it. And then, you know, he lost his opportunities by being a knucklehead and having all this dumb stuff happen. And so I think David is in a tough spot at 24 years old because you have the wrench of Canelo Alvarez that's thrown into this division, which means that everybody who has a piece of the championship, Billy Joe Saunders, who's going to be fighting Canelo, Caleb Plant, who wants to fight Canelo, they're all going to be sitting there basically waiting for Willy Wonka to ring up and let them know where their golden ticket admits them to. And so I just, you know, if you're David Benavidez right now, all you can do is, I think, show that you're an absolute top-notch professional, that you're a fun fighter that people want to watch, that you put on great performances, and that you'll have people clamoring to watch you fight, whether that be a Canelo, whether that be a Caleb Plant, whether that be a Charlo. I really do believe him in his desire to get all these fights to happen. Who knows what the politics are left and right on why they didn't happen, but I do think that it's when you have stuff taken away so easily, then I think all of a sudden you might be in a different spot as far as your willingness to make them happen. As far as performance last night against Ronald Ellis, it was a really, really solid performance from David. I mean, I think that you saw everything that you wanted to see from an offensive standpoint. You saw the blistering hand speed, the ability to unload combinations. Really, the story kind of turned because it was like, you know, he looked sensational from about round two on. And the story then really started turning into like, well, how much more punishment is Ronald Ellis going to take? And at one point in the ninth round, his corner was saying, hey, we'll give you one more round. We'll let you continue on here. And you know, they let him go on for a couple of more. When it got really bad in like the 11th round, he was taking some absolute brutal headshots. But it was one of those scenarios, you know, you think to some of the fighters who have gone through 12 rounds of hell of just taking headshots, and they weren't, you know, sometimes that stuff is worse than a guy just getting flatlined because they are so tough. And Ronald Ellis was tough. He was firing back. Like, when his Corner said that it was almost in this part where it's like, wow, that gave him such a fire that he almost is going to get two more rounds of getting absolutely pummeled, because he didn't win the rounds, but he was so willing to stand in the pocket and trade, even though he just didn't have anything that Benavidez could respect as far as getting actually hurt. So you admire his guts, but it did become a little bit of a watch on how much head trauma he was going to take as that fight went on. You know, and I'm not always the most squeamish when it comes to this stuff. I kind of get the sport, and I think you do have to respect a guy who isn't, getting annihilated. But then you think about, like, man, this guy, you know, he's got some promise. You definitely can see that this guy is a gutsy fighter, never went down, and, you know, the referee ended up stopping it. I was screaming probably in the 11th round, come on, stop it, we get the point. But eventually he did it. He eventually pulled the trigger. Now, I don't know, you know, what this does for Benavidez's championship case. You know, they mentioned this on the broadcast that he needed a quote unquote viral moment. I don't know. I think he probably just needs to put together most likely a solid year of just the most thrilling fights, the most entertaining fights that he could get. If he could lure a Charlo up, I think that'd be huge. I don't think that he can cut down to 160. I think that seems a little bit bold, even though he was very much on weight. He looks big. He looks like the body looks like it could definitely fill out a lot more. Like it looks like almost like a very unnatural 168. So I don't know. I don't even know how long he is for this division, quite frankly. Look, he's a fun fighter to watch. That hand speed, that ability to throw punches and bunches. And it is, and he has an ability to really dish out some hard shots too. It's not just pitter patter stuff. And I will say this: I think the one thing, you know, against the little rivalry that he has with Caleb Plant, you know, Caleb's last fight against Caleb Truax, I think that he kind of rested on his laurels a little bit. You know, probably could have gone out there and risked a little bit more, and he kind of just coasted. In a way, and I think with David was looking to put the nail in the coffin. So there's that, but he doesn't have the title right now. So from his standpoint, he's a little bit behind the eight ball on that. A couple other things. Let's get some news and notes from the week. Now, speaking of the middleweight division a little bit, Demetrius Andrade, who's maybe the most avoided guy in boxing, he had his next fight announced. He is going to be fighting April 17th. He is going to be fighting Liam Williams at the Hollywood Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. And that is going to be on April 17th on DAZN. Interesting note about this. This is going to be going head-to-head against Jake Paul versus Ben Askren, which is a very tough thing for Demetrius, because the last time that Demetrius Andrade actually fought, he was the main event to Jake Paul. Jake Paul and Easton Gibb was in Miami. Super Bowl week a year back before the pandemic hit. And that was, who the hell did he beat that night? It was Luke Keeler. And he put him down in the first round, and you thought that he was going to have pretty easy work, but he ended up taking about 9 rounds. But he hasn't fought since then. So it's going to be, you know, about 18 months since he then next steps into the ring. And, you know, look, Andre's another one of those guys where he's in this tough spot of nobody wants to fight him. He seems to always find himself in the least publicized position. I don't know the how smart it is to have him fight this particular week, because all the headlines are going to be about Jake Paul versus Ben Askren. Hell, you saw this week with Dana White. And Dana White got duped into, he was on Mike Tyson's podcast, and he said that he would bet $1 million against Jake Paul, which, look, I know Dana White doesn't like the Paul brothers, and he's got $1 million to bleep away. He's got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So Dana White, do whatever the hell you want. But the thing that I marvel with Jake Paul and all this stuff, you know, because the Jake Paul thing has been fascinating, because I even asked on the show, I was like, hey, what do you guys want me to cover this? And it's kind of inevitable, because everybody bites on this. Like everybody bites on Jake Paul and all the stuff because they just want to see him lose so bad. And Dana White is putting his trust in a guy who is arguably the worst hands that has ever stepped inside the octagon. And so, yeah, I would like to think, hey, this guy's been in there with the best competition. But Jake Paul is out there. He's training with legit fighters. He is out there sparring. He is out there with a good trainer. He is young, which, you feel like gives him the ability to get better against guys who are not boxers. You know, this is the other thing that keeps getting lost in all this is if he was in there and he was fighting, if he was fighting Demetrius Andrade, this wouldn't even be a contest. But he's so savvy in this matchmaking of picking guys who aren't known for their striking, who have big names, who have big followings, and it's going to be a thing eventually until he fights maybe somebody like a Conor McGregor, I guess. I don't know. But I just marvel at if I was Dana White, I'd be like, it's just simple. I don't think so. I don't think that he could beat Ben Askren, but he's so incensed about it. He's got to bet $1 million about it, which is so silly because now you're giving all this promotion to Triller and the idea that they're going to be, are you eating right out of the palm of Jake Paul, but also you're promoting another promotional company that's trying to burst onto the scene, which is kind of funny. Anyway, getting back to the Demetrius Andrade thing. Look, I'll be there. I'll see if I can get credential for that fight. I'd love to go and check that out. But I find it interesting that this guy just can't catch a break when it comes to promotion, man. Like, why would they do that? What's happening the next week? Am I missing? I don't have the boxing calendar in front of me. I would like to know, what are the fights happening in the weeks before and the weeks behind that would make them not want to make this fight happen? The next week, you have Heather Hardy is fighting on a Tampa card on ESPN. DAZN has a card the week before in the UK, Rachel Bell versus Shanna Courtney. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't understand. Why don't they just have it the next week or the week after? It seems silly to have it the same week. I don't understand what decisions go into this. I would love to know what the thinking is with Eddie Hearn and that stuff. But either way, it's cool to have boxing. Boxing keeps coming down here, and Matchroom does have a good relationship with the Hard Rock. Obviously, they put on an awesome show at Hard Rock Stadium. I had an amazing time there, and he's at Triple G here, and Gabe Rosado, Dan Jacobs was down here. I feel like I'm missing one more big one that was down here as well, but now he's bringing Demetrius Andrade, who trains in Del Rey, so that's cool. He'll get to basically be in his backyard again. His last two fights have been in South Florida, and they're both getting overshadowed by Jake Paul, which is funny. When we come back, some weird stuff happening with Tyson Fury as far as his title fight with Anthony Joshua is concerned. So we'll get into a little bit of that and some other news and notes from the week as well. Welcome back, everybody. Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. So last night you also had the Super Flyweight Championship of the World. That was the DAZN main event last night. Chocolatito Roman Gonzalez, he was taking on Juan Francisco Estrada, a rematch that was years in the making. These guys took on one another back in 2012, where he won via unanimous decision to retain his light flyweight belt. Nod goes this time. Juan Francisco Estrada gets gets the decision. The scorecards 115-113 apiece. They each got one, and then one judge had it 117-111 for Juan Francisco Estrada. I got to say, from that standpoint, I don't know what they were seeing from 117-111. I think you're high as a kite to have a card like that. If you could argue it was going to be lopsided. Now, in fairness, I scored the card for Chocolatito at 115-113 his side. It definitely even felt like there were some that I was even leaning Estrada on some tiebreak rounds. Like I was feeling like Chocolatito had the fight, not in the bag, but I felt like he was in control, especially once we got to like round nine, I felt like it was pretty clearly his fight. So I don't know. That's a tough one for Chocolatito, because you talk about a guy who is going to be 34 years old, is, you know, has kind of already been to the top of the sport. I felt like he looked as good as ever tonight. That fight was thrilling. Yeah, over 2,000 punches thrown in that fight. I just thought that Estrada, he just looked like he was missing a lot. Now, it was in Texas. I don't know if the crowd, whatever crowd was there, was swayed for Estrada. So maybe the judges, just because a lot of stuff was getting thrown. Look, sometimes you're in those cards. It's tough for a live crowd when those guys are in the pocket like that to see what's landing. And you're seeing Chocolatito, you know, kind of slip some stuff, catch a lot of stuff with his gloves. He landed more. It was 391 out of 1,317 to 314 for Estrada, and he had over 1,200. So you had Chocolatito throw more, land more, more accurate. Yeah, that's a tough one, man. That's a tough one. I think that Chocolatito deserved the nod on that one. And it's, you know, when you've been to the mountaintop like he has, you know, you never know when you're going to get back there and have a performance like this. So you outland the guy, you're busier than him, you're more accurate than him. And you think in fights like this, where the margins are so slim, that you're probably doing enough. And I know it's not like that. It's a 10-point must system. It's scored round by round, but I just felt like even in the rounds, I felt like Chocolatito, they were razor thin, but I felt like he was doing the better things. I felt like he was making Estrada miss slightly in the pocket. This was just such masterful boxing seen by both of these guys. And I just thought that Estrada just wore the shots that he got hit a little bit worse. Like, I felt like his reactions, he was, you know, if he got hit with a big shot, it was turned and effective. And I felt like Chocolatito was just like, anything he kind of hit him with, he kind of brushed off. He was catching a lot of stuff with his gloves. He was slipping. Yeah, I don't agree with that decision. I know it's tough because you don't want a fight that was that good be swung by a decision you think got wrong. But like, when you see a card and you're saying that you think that Chocolatito only won three rounds out of 12 out of that, I just don't know what you're watching there. Like, I don't know. Frustrating for sure on what should have just been a beautiful night of fighting, but really was a very, very entertaining bout. And that is most of all the biggest thing I took out of last night. I just feel bad for Roman Gonzalez, because I thought that he should have gotten the nod. Let's get into some other stuff. So speaking of guys who are way bigger than these two, but not much bigger in the scheme of things, and that is the lightweight division. Now, I had a couple bones to pick actually with the lightweight division earlier on, because this week, I'm trying to think of what the news was that really set me up. I think it was like Devin Haney's. Oh, I think it was news that like Devin Haney was going to fight, was it Jorge Linares? I think it was Jorge Linares. And, you know, I shouldn't be surprised with boxing that it always will boxing your ass. Like, it'll always get to the point where it does what it does, which is you talk a lot, you say you're going to fight, and then the fights never happen. Like, I shouldn't be surprised. But I really did feel like, to a level, this lightweight division was going to go into this new direction of Gervonta, Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, Teofimo Lopez, and even I'll throw George Kambosos in there because he is young and he is undefeated, and I think he deserves to be in there. He's just not as known because, you know, most of his work has still been under the radar. But, you know, mostly everybody vies with those four guys. And when I saw that he's fighting, when Devin Haney's going to maybe fight Jorge Linares, I'm just like, oh, man, what are we doing? You know, we sit here and we praise these guys up and down, and we think that they're going to fight, and we think it's going to happen. It just doesn't happen. And that really bummed me out. Now, I will say, Teofimo Lopez, George Kambosos, I think is a good fight. I think it's a fun fight. I think that George is going to have an opportunity to really shine on the stage. Nobody knows him yet. I think you guys will. I think it's cool. It looks like this fight's going to be down here. Like, that was the big rumor this week, that this fight is going to be in Miami. I'm trying to find out where, but the word is it's going to be down here in Miami. Look, there's not a ton of options. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, I'm thinking it's got to, it's, you know, we're talking American Airlines Arena. I don't think it's going to be in Hard Rock Stadium, although Teofimo Lopez was saying that he said that he heard Oscar De La Hoya was going to be in the co-main event. And if Oscar De La Hoya was going to be in the co-main event, first of all, I find it crazy. I feel like if Oscar De La Hoya is on the card and his comeback's on the card, I feel like that's the main event. But if Oscar De La Hoya was going to come back, you absolutely could have that at Hard Rock Stadium if you wanted to. You could do it at the Hollywood Hard Rock. I don't know what their protocols are yet on how they want to let people in for an event like that. I know people are at the casino. I know that they're doing all the great stuff over there to make that happen. And then I don't really know what other option. Was it the Watsco Center? I guess you could go to somewhere down the fairgrounds. I mean, there's been fights there. I mean, I can't imagine that Triller, who's putting $6 million into this fight, I can't imagine they're going to have it at a venue like that. So the word is, this was, you know, Teofimo Lopez let it leak. He says that it's looking like Miami, which is cool. He said, and this was on, he was on the Akiba Rock show on Sirius XM. And he says, it's likely happening May 29th in Miami. He says he's heard some talk about a Logan Paul versus 50 Cent fight, which is weird because I thought Logan Paul was fighting Floyd Mayweather. I was going to be the main event, which I still am. And the co-main was going to be Oscar De La Hoya, but apparently Oscar wasn't training. That was some of the stuff that he was throwing out there. But first of all, a couple of things. One, I respect the fact that Triller is coming out with a bang. Like, they are trying to do some wacky stuff to get people's attention on boxing. Not necessarily the purest boxing in every event, but this is a legit lightweight championship bout between two undefeated fighters, two young fighters. I think a really pleasing style. And they spent a lot of money on it. So, you know, hearing that they would put, try and pull out all the stops to get the exposure on these guys and being a serious boxing entity, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. But Teofimo said some cool stuff. He said, mark my words, when I fight George Kambosos on pay-per-view, we're going to get those number up to like 2 million buys. I guarantee you. That's really cool. I don't see that being a thing. I think they should be happy if they could get to like 600,000. I mean, 2 million is a lot, dude. But whatever. Good for Teofimo Lopez. He's thinking a big game. He's still very, very young and has some big, big plans. So that's cool, man. We got a lot of big stuff coming down here. I think at one point he referred to Miami as the new boxing Mecca. I like being a Mecca. You know, they always they leave the Mecca for New York for basketball, which is stupid because, you know, they haven't done anything good in basketball in decades. So, you know, I think it's been said. I've been liking the way the worm is turning as far as how people think of this city as a destination for boxers. Everybody trains down here. It's been good to see that since we have been more open and a little bit more willy-nilly with the rules during the pandemic than other places, that we have gotten to see some pretty cool events. We're talking Canelo Alvarez, we're talking middleweight championships of the world, we're talking now the undisputed lightweight champion is coming down here, the unified, I mean, you could dispute it all you want, Teofimo Lopez is the guy, is coming down to defend his belt, reportedly. So that's all cool, man. You know, I'll try and get some more details about it when I can get it, but that was the big thing this week, is it seems like it is swinging down here to Miami. The other big thing is, okay, so there was some news this week. People are concerned about Tyson Fury and where things stand with his fight with Anthony Joshua. Now, we had Eddie Hearn on, I guess it would be like 5 weeks ago, you know, to promote the Canelo fight. And we did ask him, and he made it seem like a formality at that point that the fight was going to be announced. Like, they were getting ready to announce it. And then, you know, a lot of the same thing. I caught a couple of interviews with him this week on YouTube promoting the Chocolatito and Juan Francisco Estrada fight. Same thing. Formalities, signatures, all going to be announced soon. But Tyson Fury had a couple of weird things this week that he announced. He said, one, that he's willing, that he just wants to fight. He was willing to go fight Wilder because he's tired of being jerked around with this whole Anthony Joshua thing. And then the other thing that he came out is that he said that he's not training anymore. That apparently during an ESPN Plus telecast that he's not training. I'm not training anymore. I've never stopped training since December 2017, the year after those world title fights. I trained the next day. I'd go running for 10 miles. I'm in the gym, sparring, messing around. I'm taking some time away from the game at this moment because I've been ready to fight since I beat Deontay Wilder and I've had no success at getting another fight. At the moment, I'm just concentrating on getting me 10 pints of Stella. I think the thing that's interesting about this is, you know, with Tyson getting to this point, it eerily reminds me a lot of Conor and what Conor was going through with the UFC, where this is a guy who wanted to be active. He's a guy that likes to stay sharp. You know, he had the fights against Daniel against Vice, and he had the Schwartz. He took on the Schwartz, beat him. And, you know, he's a guy that likes to be an active champion. We're seeing this. These guys want to be active. Canelo Alvarez wants to be active, even if he's fighting just somebody, just to get the walks in. These guys have been inactive for a long, long time. And you see this stuff. First of all, there's a couple of things that are interesting with this. His relationship is with Top Rank. Top Rank is having a rough go of it right now with a lot of their top fighters. In regards to Terrence Crawford, we just mentioned Teofimo Lopez. The breakup that they've had with him has been ugly. Now Tyson Fury's upset that he hasn't gotten a fight. You know, Bob Arum's old as hell. And who knows? I mean, maybe there's some issues that are going on there. I don't know. But for a fight that seems like it's a formality, and now you're saying that the A side of that, and I do consider Tyson Fury that for this fight, is, you know, basically ready to walk away from it all. And he's a guy who has walked away from the sport beforehand saying stuff like this. I think it's a little concerning. I think it's a little concerning. I don't think he's going down, you know, the road of the demons that he was having beforehand. You know, he's a guy that's been pissed off about the politics of boxing before. So it's something to keep an eye on. Coming up next week, we got some UFC. Actually, got Derek Brunson and Kevin Holland. I'm excited for that one. Kevin Holland has been on a bit of a roll. He's another guy that's really taken advantage of the UFC needing a lot of fights in the pandemic. He's riding right now a 5-fight win streak. He won 5 fights in 2020. He was an absolute monster. After losing to Brendan Allen at the end of 2019, he beat Anthony Hernandez, Joaquin Buckley before Joaquin had the craziest knockout you ever seen. Darren Stewart, just beat Jacare, you know, and tied the UFC record for most wins in a year. So Kevin Holland's riding high right now. I think with his middleweight division, it's a bit up in the air right now because you have Izzy who's coming back after his loss to Jan. Kevin Holland was talking some trash to Stylebender. So, look, Stylebender's not one that hasn't been, can pull some stuff out of the hat as far as some matchups are concerned. And look, he beats a guy at Derek Brunson, who is a guy who is firmly in the top 10 there. He's moving on up, man. So I think that's a fun matchup to check out next week. Gregor Gillespie, who's coming back. Tai Tuivasa is on the card next week. So some fun action as far as the UFC is concerned, coming up next week as well. So keep an eye on that. That's our show for this week, everybody. Hope everybody has a great rest of your Sunday. Miss any of the show, download the podcast. You could do so on the radio.com app or, of course, on Apple Podcasts as well. Look us up there, and we will talk to you next time.